Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Take a Man podcast, wrapping up here with our mailbag. Again, your questions, HoffmanShow.com. Use the contact page or Instagram at Hoffman.sports or Logan_Paulson82. This one came via email, Logan, from Austin, who said, can you and Logan elaborate on how players who have good to great separation don't get more targets or production? Luke McCaffrey comes to mind with having multiple games with the best separation, but low production. I've been scratching my head why he doesn't get more targets if he can separate. So just to, I think, back this up, support this with some data. I think a lot of folks look at the separation data from Next Gen Stats, and they're, you know, at each game, there's like a little web graphic that Next Gen Stats produces that's available on their website. And often Luke would have the highest separation. Obviously folks get film clips or whatever. They see like, oh, Luke was open here. But he obviously did not have a ton of production and didn't see a lot of balls in his freshman season, his rookie year, if you will, in the NFL. So why does this happen?
Yeah. So I think, couple things. One, I think the way that they determine that is like its proximity to nearest defender based on GPS data.
Yes.
And so, for example, like Logan Paulson has great separation data versus, I forget what team it was, but like back in 2017. Why is that? Because Logan Paulson was just chipping and running to a flat, and I was not covered on all those routes. Like, so it looks like, oh, wow, Logan's really rounding people up. Look how open he is. He's doing a great job. You got to go back and watch his reps to kind of determine whether he's in the progression or not. And so I think like for example, like, you know, you're running a go and you're clearing out, like you're really not in the progression, right? And the defense at some point is going to drop you. And so I think like, they're going to be like, this is a go. I can feather off this and make this play. And he'll be look like he's wide open, like on a post or whatever. He looks like he's wide open, but the quarterback's not, that's not part of the quarterback's vision. People say, oh, well, that's dumb. The quarterback should be looking at him. He's wide open. You can't look at everyone all the time, right? You have to give the quarterback a progression, an opportunity to say, this is one, this is two, this is where the ball goes for my third opportunity here. Like you can't a full field five guy deal. Like that's cartoon stuff. It just doesn't work. Obviously Tom Brady or Peyton Manning could do that, but even them, they understand base pre-snap, like where the ball relatively should go. So I think with Luke, there was a lot of times where people were like, oh, his separation data was so good. I think Cleveland was the one that comes to mind. He ran two chip routes in that game and literally was standing by himself on third and 15 with not a soul around him for about 10 yards. So that's going to really inflate your separation data because they say, oh, here's a play where no one was rounding the 10 yards. The algorithm or the computer program doesn't understand that, like, he's not a relevant component to that play, right? So when you watch him on more competitive downs, like, the number normalizes a little bit, right? And I think that's where I'd say with Luke's separation data, you got to just kind of go back and say, hey, here's a couple plays. Like, I think there was another play where someone screenshotted Luke. He was running like a through, you know? And so on Dagger, which is, I think, if you have this clip, I'm sorry if I get the concept wrong, but I think it was a deep in and a through route, right? So that through in every offense I've been in is called a love of the game through, right? You're just running it because you love football. You're not going to get the ball. So as you run through there and the quarterback's getting ready to throw, the defense knows that too. So they're going to collapse on the dig. The ball's going to go to the dig. And Luke's going to look on the screenshot like he's wide open. And I think that's another thing about, like, the types of route he's running, where he were, it was in the progression, like, where, what's the down and distance? All those things factor into Luke's open score and his relative lack of production, I think.
Can I ask you then what was probably a lot of fans' follow-up then on Dagger? It's for the love of the game through, and if the defense knows it, it's going to collapse on the dig. So again, you have the outside receiver who's coming up, running, what, 15 yards on a dig? And then, you know, your classic in-cut, right? 90-degree in-cut. And then you have an inside receiver, in this case, Luke, a slot, who's running a go, right? Just straight up the field. And if the defense knows that that's the concept and they're going to collapse on that dig, why not, like, fake and then throw the go, right? So how do defenses play that is not an option and thus shutting down that hypothetical?
Yeah, so obviously that route is called, it's an alert, right? It's alerted versus two man, right? So, like, if you get two man, so split safety and it's man coverage, like, that, you can throw that route. So for those Commanders fans, Kirk Cousins threw this route to Santana Moss versus Baltimore in 2012. So obviously it happens so rarely, I can just call it off the top of my head, but it does happen, right? You see guys do this all the time.
It happens like once or twice a season where you're oh, sick. The through is the open on Dagger. Yeah. You'll love to see it.
Right. But, like, the way defenses are, like, and the way you run that route is they have to respect it. They have to, like, because the way you coach it is, like, I'm running the through, which I ran a lot of in my career, surprise, surprise.
Yeah, for the love of the game, Logan Paulson.
So if it's cover two and there's a safety to my side of the field, I'm running through the inside shoulder of that safety. I'm going to run up on his toes and run through the inside shoulder, making it so that he can't bypass me. Like, that's how they coach the route. If he bypasses me, then we're going to come back. They're going to put Santana Moss there. We're going to run all go special. He's going to run the same route and he's going to hit it for a touchdown, right? So that's where, like, you got to kind of say, on this play, we're trying to throw the dig. But if the defense is not respecting the through, then we're going to call a different play and get the quarterback so his eyes are where we want them, so we get the ball completed the way we want to get it completed.
Right.
And so that's what I'd say to that.
Yeah, the quarterback is going to look at that and just to make sure, right? He's going to make sure that the dig is open. And, you know, if the safety were to just be like, that's Logan Paulson, I'm literally not covering him, then yeah, your quarterback is probably going to see that he's wide open. But these things happen in the NFL so fast, and people love to, like, this is why screenshots are relatively useless. Because, like, there are times where you screenshot, and it happens to me when I'm watching stuff frame by frame, like trying to understand a blocking, you know, surface or whatever for a running back, and you hit, you know, one, two, oh man, there's the hole, and then you hit the arrow button one more time, literally the next frame, and there's a body in the hole, and you're like, that was wide open. Where did that guy come from? And you have to, like, go back and, like, trace the dude to be like, oh, he was a looper, he was this, or just that linebacker was shot out of a cannon. And so these things happen very quickly. And so, you know, the safety will take, it's kind of a dance. Like, he's going to take his back pedal. He's going to say, okay, I respected this. Now I'm going to see if I can break on this ball and break up the dagger. And the quarterback's going to try to fit it in there, and the receiver might take a huge shot. Or if he takes, you know, one too many steps to respect that throughout, then you're going to have an easy one, and maybe you got some run after catch. But, like, those are the margins of the NFL. It's steps, it's half steps. And for a guy like Luke, I think screenshots can tell one story. Data can tell one story because of where the progression is, and the film with a little bit deeper understanding can tell a different one.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, especially with the running back stuff. I mean, it's receivers too, because it's like, I've gotten a bunch of screenshots of, like, look at this dude wide open. But then when I go look at the clip, and the guy's taking a screenshot, like, the quarterback has already thrown the ball, or he's already kind of made his decision. Like, the timing of this is so important. Like, everyone talks about Dagger, like, why do you predetermine the dig? Like, one of the reasons you have to predetermine the dig is because, like, the throw has to be on such good timing, right? So basically, when the quarterback gets to the top of his drop, if that underneath hook player attaches to the flat or attaches to the pivot route, I'm throwing the dig, right? I'm trusting that the receiver is going to protect the throw. And that's why NFL timing is different than college timing. It's different than high school timing, for sure. It makes it so much more challenging to make these throws because the quarterback has to be accurate, has to have great arm velocity, but also trust throwing windows in a way that is so unique. And that's why you see, like, John Gruden on Instagram, like, losing his mind about the de-evolution of the college quarterback position. It's because of stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
Because of the anticipatory nature of the throws. And again, like, it, unless you know what you're looking at sometimes, and I'm not trying to gatekeep information here.
Sure.
But sometimes it gives you a false narrative of what's realistically possible in the context of the play.
For sure. And if you want to see what happens, if you throw a dagger late, the dig late on dagger, go play Madden and try to throw a run dagger and see how many incompletions you throw or how many times you get picked off. Say that from
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
From experience. Logan. Sometimes we're a little late on the dig, and then I just need to cut that sucker loose. All right, last question comes from Max. Max says, I've got a Take Command mailbag question that should be near and dear to Logan's heart. Are you ready, Logan?
Yes.
Ball knowers seem to all agree that John Bates is an elite blocking tight end. For some reason, PFF gave him a 49.9 run blocking grade last year. I know you guys don't work at PFF, but could you talk about what makes Bates so good and maybe what is missing from PFF's grades? Love the show. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Max. So, appreciate the question. Yeah, Logan.
Great question. Now, off you buckle go. In. We've got an hour. We've got to talk about tight ends blocking. Here we go. So the one thing about PFF is the way they grade is, I'm trying to remember the exact metric, but it's like a plus is a knockdown. So like a bonus play. So like they call it like a one is what they call it, is a knockdown. So anytime that you as an offender get that guy on the ground, it's a one. If it's just a good block, it's a zero. It's like not a plus or negative. And if you lose, it's a negative, right? So I really don't love that metric for PFF for linemen. I don't think it's indicative of how productive they are. So for example, like one of the hardest blocks, in my opinion, in football is a center reaching the play side shade. So the guy that's off his snap hand shoulder, right? If a center can do that, man, like think like Jason Kelsey, like yeah. That's like Hall of Fame caliber of center. They give that a zero, right? For a tight end, like man reaching a wide nine is one of the most challenging things at the position.
So we're talking down block. This is one where we just need to bring out the whiteboard as well.
Yeah. But so like a wide nine is like, you know, you got DeMarcus. I got DeMarcus Ware out here. I'm on the right side. I got DeMarcus Ware one-on-one. I have no inside help. The tackle's in a double team with the guard. They're double teaming the three technique. I am by myself on an island versus the best player in football right now.
Yeah.
Right. Von Miller. Great example.
And you got to get outside of him and pin him back inside.
So this is the sweet science of blocking outside zone, Craig. I got to make him feel like I'm going to reach him, but not actually reach him. not be too short, not be too wide, because if I'm too wide, he's going to beat me inside, and if I'm too short, he's going to set a hard edge. I got to be right in that Goldilocks zone, physically down the middle, not duck my head because he's athletic enough to move, and they give that a zero, right? So that drives me nuts, because it's like that block, when I see a tight end make that block, like I'm like, that dude is an absolute maniac, right? It's the same thing on power, for example, right? Or duo is a good example. So let's say I got a six technique, head up screws on me, and it's a big, like, you know, Cam Jordan defensive end, right? The offensive line, they're going to double the three technique. I'm by myself versus one of the best run-stopping players in football. And they give that a zero. That should for sure be a plus, in my opinion, right? But they don't have the subjectivity to the grade because they want anybody to be able to do the grading system. They want my mom to be able to get the metric and be like, is the guy on the ground? No. Is the block completed? Yes. It's a zero, right? And did the guy lose his block? So is the guy in between, is the guy attacking the ball carrier? That's a negative one, right? So that's, the metric is so simple. It doesn't account, much like the separation metric for Luke McCaffrey, it doesn't account for any of the nuance of blocking at the position for anyone blocking, even receivers, fullbacks, running back, any of that stuff, no nuance there. It's just, did they meet this binary? It's not binary because there's three elements, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Metric, right? So when I look at what they asked John Bates to do, they asked him to do really hard things often. So I know, having done it, how hard this is. I know when he's playing the New Orleans Saints and he's got a down block, a six technique, head up six, one of these big 280-pound defensive ends, like that's where you get paid, right? That, as a blocking tight end, that's where you make your money. And when you go around the league, no one does it as well as him. He's going to lose that block. That guy is making more money than him. He's a better athlete than him. He's bigger and stronger and faster. He's going to lose it. But John Bates is able to kind of survive the down, give the back an opportunity. Again, it's what I did for the majority of my career. I don't think they understand. They definitely don't, how challenging some of that stuff is from a technical and a physical standpoint. And so when I see that grade, I'm like, if you go watch the film, I know this is a high leverage block. They're putting John on an island here. You don't do that with someone you don't think can handle it. And he does a really good job of it week in and week out. So as an example, like my PFF run blocking grade was always hit or miss, right? But I'm blocking Calais Campbell on a down block versus the 49ers. Like, he's 6'8", 290. Like, at some point, I'm going to lose, right? But did I give the back enough opportunity to hit the cut? Yes. Like, so that's where I'd say, like, it gets understanding the challenge of the position and why he's getting paid so much money to do that is because he's like one of probably right now, he's one of one in terms of guys that do that at a high level. You know, he's the Travis Kelce of run blocking tight ends. And again, like, that's from a guy who did it for a long time, and I have a ton of respect for his game. So
believe it or not, Logan, I don't have a ton to add here. Sure. I think that was a great explanation. And like, obviously, I guess what I would add is the value of that versus the value of Travis Kelce are different values, which is why Travis Kelce makes a lot more money. If Logan Paulson could have been Travis Kelce, I think
I would have done that.
I don't think you would be doing a different podcast because he's got a podcast, and I do think they have a few more listeners than us, although that might have something to do with some other factors. But I do think that the what that allows you to do as an offense is got to be pretty cool if you're Cliff, to be like, oh, I can trust this guy to do that, because otherwise you have to come up with other solutions and or just not call those plays. And so I do think it allows for a wider array of stuff. And then the other piece too is this question is about run blocking, but he's also a guy that you can trust on an island almost like a tackle as a pass blocker. And yeah, it's not ideal when he's got to, if he's got to block Myles Garrett, but like, what is ideal blocking Myles Garrett? Myles Garrett tripping over a shoelace is ideal to block Myles Garrett. Outside of that, like, you're going to have to live with some stuff. But I think that what that allows you to do is a lot of different stuff. And then I think the next big step for John is obviously to become a more reliable and better pass catcher. And that's something that you've talked about, that you wish you had focused on that a little bit more in your career, instead of just leaning into the thing that was kind of your superpower of this incredible blocking tight end, to be like, okay, how do I get on the field for more stuff? Because that opens up the playbook even more. And I think we saw some of that last year where they were not afraid to use him as a receiver. And that made the offense less predictable, because it can't just be, oh, when John Bates is in the game, we're going to run the football. And I think that's the interesting thing to come here with Cliff, this offense and Bates moving forward, now that they've signed him up long term.
Yeah, think about, I mean, like just how open he is on some of those throughs. Like when he comes in, you're like, this is a run.
Yeah.
And he's able to kind of work like this pop pass, you know, and the defense, they're like, you can tell it's a check when he's in the game, right? And so they'll come up, they'll fit the run hard, and he's wide open on some stuff. And again, that's because of his impact as a run blocker. And think about how easy that throw is for Jaden Daniels. It's like an easy button once or twice a game. And I think that's awesome. And again, like he, you know, one of the things you said that the staff said is they want to make sure he develops as a pass catcher.
Yeah.
They're not doing that to be altruistic. They're doing that because they understand, like, so for example, when I was here in Washington, me and Darrell Young, we went in the game in regular personnel. So 21 teams would match us in goal line personnel because we were so effective at running the ball out of that. So imagine if we could run like a little pop pass or a play action pass, or we could get someone who could win versus man to man coverage. Like, that's devastating because now all of a sudden they've tilted their hand and said, shoot, this is how we're going to play this because you guys are really good running the football in this formation. You've got two guys that are pretty physical that can attack our edges. Now, like, shoot, like that's easy for the quarterback. And so building the offense out and taking advantage of those tells that the defense is trying to indicate on is extremely helpful. And so, again, I think I look at John, what he does, the matchups they put him in, how he wins those matchups the majority of the time, in my opinion, and what he can do as a pass catcher, given more opportunity. I think it's just a good piece for your offense. And there's a reason that all these guys, teams are looking for this position, this blocking wide that can block an end, but also run a seam, like, because it makes your offense so much more dangerous.
Yeah. And you only have to do that stuff often enough to kind of get teams to stop matching you in goal line. And then you get right back to being like, okay, now we got the advantage again. Now we're just going to run the ball down your throat because that's what we want to do with this guy in there in the first place. So it's just, you know, you got to have the change up and throw it often enough that you can then rock the fastball with regularity and effectiveness. Logan Paulson there, Craig Hoffman here, thanking you for your mailbag questions. Great ones today. Let's get more of them in. We got a couple saved, but we certainly have some room to get more in next week's mailbag. Not exactly sure what we're doing Thursday's show yet. We'll definitely take a look probably at some of the UDFAs as we're getting ready for rookie minicamp. Preview that, what kind of happens at a rookie minicamp. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then we'll review minicamp next week on the show. So got lots coming here on Take Command. We got some guests that we've reached out to as well. So hopefully have some fun off-season conversations now that we're really in the throes of it. Although, Logan, OTAs are happening now. So, like, what is the off-season? July. July's the off-season. That's when nothing happens.
Silly season.
Yeah, that's when we really get into, like, ranking season. But for now, having some fun with what's going on because there's still stuff happening. All right, that's our show. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Subscribe wherever you are doing so right now, and we'll see you next time on Take Command. Thanks for watching this clip of Take Command, which has a brand new home.
That's right. You can watch on YouTube at the Team 980.
You can also listen to full episodes in the free Odyssey app, which is now enabled with Apple CarPlay. So we'll just, you know, follow you around.